Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the drizzly night of fruit. I'm sorry, I was channeling Clint Eastwood for a second. Anyway, go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the fundage. The address is 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. The phone number is 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Okay, we've got Philbert with us. Philbert, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello once again, my friend.
Well, hello. Welcome back. So, you were just talking right now. You had sent me an article a little while back, meaning maybe a couple hours ago, from National Vanguard. And National Vanguard is the publication of, what's the name of the organization?
The National Alliance. There's a lot of good articles on there about, say, current events and, you know, the plight of white people. And nationalvanguard.org. It's ran by Kevin Alfred Strom, which also does the weekly podcast called American Dissident Voices.
Right, and that, and it's the organization that was, if not founded by, at least best known by William Luther Pierce.
Yes, he did found it. He was the original founder.
Okay. Yeah, I thought he was a founder. Okay.
And which I'm also a member of, I would add.
Okay, good. So the article was about what everybody's talking about. And you know, I'll probably wind up having five shows this week all talking about this. And I, you know, but people are talking about it. I don't like to talk about the same thing over and over and over again. Don't want to be too repetitive. But the National Vanguard, this is an organization that is concerned about the plight of white people in particular in the United States, right? But I suppose in white countries in general. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. Namely, the U.S. and Europe.
Okay.
Although the headquarters are in upper eastern Tennessee.
All right. That's a nice area, nice part of the country.
It's a beautiful area. As I mentioned a few months ago, I paid them a visit and met some people there and helped volunteer some work. They're building a memorial library for Dr. William Luther Pierce, so people can go there and actually do research. And they're trying to preserve, I guess you could say, the truth. You know, is one way to look at it, but. Yeah, they're doing good things as an organization. Anyway, go ahead, continue.
Okay, so the article's on the Gaza-Israel brouhaha, shall we call it that. And it was, I didn't get through the whole thing, but, you know, it started off saying, well, what was the tone? It was like, what have Jews ever done for me? What have Palestinians ever done for me? Neither have done a whole lot for me. Obviously, the Jews have done a lot against us. And then also, if you just look at it objectively, the in that conflict, which has been going on for decades, the Jews are the bad guys for the most part. Am I being fair in my summation there?
I believe so, yes. I would add this also, that one good reason, I think, to, I guess you could say, support the Palestinians, at least mentally. I'm not talking about, you know, funding or anything like that. Everybody has their own opinion on that. But one thing I would add is the Palestinians haven't entrenched and dug their way into subvert our societies and institutions, at least to the extent that Jews have. So they don't really pose the same type of threat that you know, historically Jews have in the U.S. especially. So that's a good reason, I feel, to at least support them in word.
Okay. In word. And this is the thing. So here we are. We are white people in America. And as white people in America, what can we do concrete for the Palestinians? And I'd say, really, there's not anything we can do concrete for the Palestinians. We're not going to, for the most part, right? We're not going to get our own government to intervene on behalf of the Palestinians. The best we can do is see to it. You know, it's the best we can do is oppose our government getting involved in any way, because the involvement that our government is going to have is going to be negative. It's going to be pro-Israel. The political class is unashamedly, shamelessly, I guess that's a better word. They are shamelessly pro-Israel. They spew any lie with complete lack of shame. They just do this. So, you know, even somebody who has a genuine feeling of solidarity with the Palestinians, genuinely supports the Palestinians, could completely make common cause with just an isolationist who hates all foreigners. I mean, you could make, if you're an, or just, you know, Ron Paul doesn't hate foreigners, but, you know, Ron Paul is an isolationist, right? And that mentality, that, I mean, we could make complete common cause with them. To the extent that people from outside that conflict zone can intervene in any positive way, it's not going to be the Americans. It's not going to be our representatives. So just keeping our representatives out of it is the best we can hope for. I don't think there's anything concrete that we could contribute. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely agree. I would add also that it's, you know, would borderline dangerous to, if you wanted to, if you had money to spare to do that, I would recommend you given a donation to the National Alliance. You know, we're doing work here if you feel that's necessary. But I mean, I can see that going very badly. If you were to try to do that, you know, you could possibly be put in prison for funding terrorism, you know. So I think, as you pointed out, yeah, the one thing that we can do, and that would be sufficient, is just to not cuck, you know, to the Zionist media, you know, the Jewish media, the machine, and, you know, speak the truth as best as that you know it. You know, I think that's about all we can do.
So there was, well, for instance, there's a magazine called The Washington Report on Mideast Affairs. I think that's what it's called. I used to subscribe to it. I say my mother, she subscribed to it for me, and so I'd get the magazines. She'd pay the bill. It was a good deal. And there were serious people on their editorial board, former ambassadors and whatnot, but people who were very alarmed at the Zionist takeover of our foreign policy. And there's another organization called Council for the National Interest, which probably is related. Maybe there's a lot of overlapping board membership. Those so far have not been accused of terrorism or support for terrorism, but I understand that in Britain, making like support for Hamas, even just vocal support, not even material support, but simply vocal support, is now going to be considered grounds for deportation, which that's considered grounds for deportation. I remember a few years ago, there was somebody who had raped little girls or something, who had been in England, who had been put on a plane and was going to be taken out of the country, and anti-deportation activists had managed to buy tickets to get on that same plane and cause such a commotion from inside the plane that the plane couldn't take off and the guy couldn't be deported. I mean, like a really, like a criminal that nobody should be defending. So, you've gone from that. I guess that wasn't the government so much. That was the government actually going to deport somebody, which doesn't happen very much. You think of all of the grooming that they had in Britain and how many people got deported over that. But now, oh no, but if you say you're in support of Hamas, you could be deported. Well, let's see how that actually works, because you've got London. I don't know what the Muslim share of the London population is, but the white British share is certainly under 50%. So I don't know what the Muslim share, you know, there's a lot of people of Hindu descent or a lot of people of African descent as well. It's not all Muslim.
Yeah, my dog agreed.
I'd like to see them try to do that.
So you were just saying nobody gets deported very often. And I just saw something on Telegram the other day on a channel I'm subscribed to. It's named the Western Chauvinist, if anybody's heard of it. But it was a report about how the Biden government just deported a German family that has about 10 kids that's lived here for a long time. And, you know, meanwhile, they're raping they're letting in rapists, you know, on our border, and lots of Hindus and Dindus. So, but they will deport you. I guess what I'm trying to say is they will deport you if you're white, you know, so.
Well, I mean, I would support deporting people who wear COVID masks, and not just not foreigners. I would support deporting Americans who are still wearing COVID masks.
That's the start.
That got to start somewhere. But, okay, here's something. This was, I don't know if you've seen this, and it looks too professional just to be a hoax, but you never know. But I'm assuming it is valid. It certainly has the ring of truthiness. So I saw a TV report, a TV reporter. It looked like a TV reporter who was in the field, and there was a girl in at the desk in the studio. And they were talking via, you know, some sort of telecommunications. It looked like a local news or, you know, cable news. It's a standard type of setup. And I'm only I had never heard of the outlet before, and that's why I'm equivocating just a little bit. But at any rate, the reporter said he was standing at the border crossing in San Ysidro, which is near San Diego, and that the a pedestrian crossing was closed to Americans, and it was closed to Mexicans. So it was being used exclusively by illegal aliens. And he also, uncritically, but specifically, said that the only vehicular traffic that was allowed in were buses from Jewish Family Services, which were
go figure.
I think Ryan Dawson, every time there's a Jewish name or something, he's got a bell, and he rings his bell when he's doing his podcast. But Jewish Family Services, which is busing these people to points within the United States. And there's so much of this going on. So I don't know. Are people going to start knowing more? Is there going to be more notice? Are they going to be noticing? It was interesting to see that specifically mentioned as Jewish Family Services. And, you know, you've got Tony Blinken. He went over to Israel this past week and announced that he was there not just as a unit, U.S. Secretary of State, but as a Jew. He was over there as a Jew. So, you know, is the mask slipping? Will people notice? Or are they just, you know, do we have so much Stockholm syndrome that we will jump up and down and scream about all these problems. But oh, it's not the Jews. I'm not an anti-Semite. It's a communist. It's the Chinese. It's secular humanism.
It's the Russians.
It's the Russians.
Yeah. Well, I think it's ironic. The way I'm seeing things is, you know, they've been letting infinity brown people into our border, you know, for the past, what, since 1965, was it? Or was it 67, the Hart-Celler Act?
The 65 was the Hart-Celler Act. The floodgates opened rather slowly. I mean, I remember. I don't remember 65 so well, but I do remember 1966. I remember seeing at some point with kind of dismay, if not horror, an Indian woman in a sari where her gut was hanging out. And cool. I saw that once. I didn't see it again for like 10 years. So, I mean, you weren't seeing – in 1966, you weren't seeing tons of foreigners flooding in. I remember going to Chinatown in New York City and seeing Chinese people. And I was like, oh, my goodness, they're Chinese. They really do have slanty eyes. but I didn't see another one for years and years. I guess when I couldn't make the TH sound. So when I was in first grade, I got sent to a special like speech therapist that came to our school once a week. And mostly she was teaching the black kids how to, well, they were making TH sounds too, but they were making, when they were substituting in D and T for TH, where I was substituting in F and Z for TH, you know, because I was like, you know, a superior white person. But at any rate, the speech therapist was Chinese, and she was kind of cute too. She was kind of cute, and I liked her, and so I tried really hard, and lo and behold, I was able to make the TH sound before you knew it, and I never saw her again. But and I never saw another Chinese person for like years after that. So you didn't get the flooding in, but it did set the stage. I think you started seeing you got Vietnamese people flooding in when Saigon fell. And, you know, you started getting Central Americans flooding in when we were, when I say we, when our government, and even in the Reagan administration, you had a heavy what you'd call neocon representation in the foreign policy establishment. And they were screwing around in Central America. And that always, it creates a pretext for inviting in the losing side, especially if the losing side was allied with us, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's only one group of people that kind of benefit from this, you know, it's the elite, the upper class, Jews for the most part. But, you know, I think it all goes without saying that, you know, if you own a business and you get cheap labor, you don't have to necessarily be Jewish to benefit from that, too. So, I mean, there's a lot of burdens that or not burdens, but I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, that or race traders do that has gone unsaid for a long time. And one thing I'd like to point out is that we very likely wouldn't be in this situation if it weren't for race traders. I forget who said this, but there was a guy. Older video I watched from looked like it was from the 90s. I wish I could recall who this was, but I just saw this one video. But he said, there's no such thing as black power. There's no such thing as Jewish power. There's only white weakness. And, you know, he kind of postured the theory that white or Jewish power is a representation or a manifestation of white weakness, if you will. And I always thought that's a very good point.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
As Jewish power, there's only white weakness. And, you know, he kind of postured the theory that Jewish power is a representation or a manifestation of white weakness, if you will. And I always thought that's a very good point.
It is a good point.
Because we can go around and, you know, I'll admit I'm kind of guilty of this too sometimes, but we really need to, as a race, as a whole, we really need to look in the mirror and understand why this happened. And we bear some of the responsibility for this, I think, you know, not on an individual basis, of course. I guess you do if you're a very powerful person, right? And you're lobbying for things that hurt white people. Yeah. But I mean, as a whole, you know, that's a whole different can of worms, but it's something to think about, I guess.
If you do an analysis of Jewish power, they have a lot of power resources. Some of these power resources, like to the extent they have a lot of money, that's actually their power, and that's not simply our weakness. But the media power is our weakness. There's no reason why we need to consume their media, especially nowadays. When you had the TV and there was only three networks and all three networks were run by Jews, and if you grew up in the 60s and the 70s, if you wanted to gel out, you know, TV, there wasn't an alternative, right? But there's so many alternatives now. So media, you know, and of course newspapers, a lot of newspapers wound up being run by Jews, but certainly now there's no reason there's no monopoly on media. And so, yeah, that's weakness. But the other thing is just these narratives. They have so much, to the extent that people are race traitors, if you want to use that term, most of them, it's not intentional. They don't actually understand what they're doing. They don't think they're being anti-white. Like for women, it's very common that they are sympathetic to, they're just trying to, feed their children. They're just trying to make a better life for themselves. And they don't really put the two and two together that bringing in especially large numbers of people from different cultures, different races and whatnot, winds up depriving the people here of resources that were ours.
Look at the benefit of this. Look at the benefit. If you do that, then you won't be called a racist, right? Because or an anti-Semite. I mean, I don't want to be called racist. I mean, that's the most important thing.
Well, and so it's not simply women, but I'm using women as an example here.
Right, I understand.
Yeah, and women, I do think that they have more of a tendency towards conformity. And I think women are more dependent on social cohesion and things like that, because when there's a lot of discord, women are probably not going to do as well. Certainly if there's violence and disorder, women are, they're at the mercy of whatever's going on. So I think women tend to be just much more conformist. And one piece of evidence I'd show for that is fashion, right? And
yeah, good point.
I mentioned my mother earlier. My mother, commenting on the fashion industry, said, it's a way of getting women to spend a lot of money in order to look ridiculous. But, there's just much, the fashion industry for women is just much more than the fashion industry for men. And, men, for the most part, just don't care. There is fashion for men, I'm sure. Anybody who knows me would know I don't know much about it, obviously. But they're just conformist. And because they're more conformist, I think that they are more likely to want to be seen as good and not causing trouble and supporting the consensus, being part of it. Whereas men, I think, are at least more likely to be willing to be to object to things and be what contrarian or whatever. I don't know. I'll kick it back to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're right, and we live, unfortunately, currently in a very gynocentric society, which, mind you, is not by accident. I don't think it's by accident at all. As I was going to say a little bit ago, I'll wrap up this thought, but we've been letting in, infinity brown people for a long time now, especially, under the Biden regime. And we're always taught from the media to, well, in movies in general and in Hollywood and in stories, you're supposed to root for the underdog, right? Like root for the underdog, the KKK is bad and they're just trying to keep the blacks down and the blacks are the underdog, that sort of thing, and that's been instilled and ingrained almost like a religion for a long time. And I think it's pretty funny. Now we have a lot of people, especially these brown people.
Truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system. And it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A 1-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Trying to keep the blacks down and the blacks are the underdog, that sort of thing, you know? And that's been instilled and ingrained almost like a religion for a long time. And I think it's pretty funny. Now we have a lot of people, and especially these brown people of, you know, Indian descent, Middle Eastern, no matter where you are, I'll just say non-whites, make it a little easier. So we have all these non-whites that are now rooting for the underdog, which is obviously Palestinians, you know, and I just think that is just hilarious, you know, and I don't see how the powers that shouldn't be are going to square this circle.
Yeah, it is difficult. And this is one of the things I know I've mentioned this before. Other people have mentioned it, but the anti-white coalition that was cobbled together, that was used pretty effectively in flooding us with immigration, in pushing trannyism and gayness, and it includes within it, it contains within itself too many contradictions, and it really wasn't viable or sustainable in the long term, because, you know, a lot of the people, a lot of the immigrants that they get brought in are from societies that are patriarchal, that you know, aren't amenable to women's liberation, that are hostile to homosexuality, that aren't going to accept that, and and some of them, I mean, the Muslims around the world, they do have an issue with Jews and Israel, and so it just really wasn't a coalition that could stick together for, given all of the issues that are coming about. I guess for just saying that Trump was bad and we need lots more immigration, maybe it was a reasonable coalition for that. Okay, immigrants wanted their relatives coming in. The Jews want white people to be a minority. The gay knew that they got their gay marriage and all of their status as oppressed and therefore high status. They got that from they knew they got that from this Jewish-led coalition, so they were loyal to it, and so the gays were supporting this, and then women too. But you know, it's all falling apart. And obviously, there's the push for trannyism has impinged on women, right? You know, now you've got these male perverts who are invading spaces that had been reserved for women, and it is all falling apart.
Yeah. So Israel is a terrorist state, and it's almost entirely controlled by Jewish interests, and it constantly omits the coverage of the brutal treatment of the non-Jews by the Jews in that region, being the Middle East. And our view of the conflict should mainly be determined by the fact that Israel is the de facto world headquarters of the war against white people, and is closely related war against sexual normalcy.
Yeah, so. I saw those ideas in that article. I mean, I would technically say I don't actually think that Israel is the headquarters of this, but it is. I think really the headquarters. I don't know if there is a headquarters.
Maybe New York City. You could say that too, I guess. Maybe.
You know, there's Hollywood. There is Israel. So I don't know if there really is a headquarters, but Israel has an extremely special place in this. And a point I was making a couple of weeks ago was white people. I had no idea that this was all going to break out, but I was saying, you know, and I'm not the first person to say it. Lots of people say this, that white people are the new Palestinians.
We are having our land taken away from us. You could say we're being ethnically cleansed. If you look at, so the British gained control of Palestine under a League of Nations mandate following World War I. And before that time, there was very little, there was some Jewish population in that area, but and some of it had only just started as a result of the Zionist movement of Theodor Herzl. But then you look on the maps and everything's changed since then.
They had a population there, but I'm sure it was less than 10%. And then you started getting this mass migration. And still in 1948, when the British, after this Jewish terrorist campaign, and it was a terrorist campaign. It was spoken of as a terrorist campaign at the time. It included the bombing of the King David Hotel, where the British had their headquarters. That it was still minority Jewish, that land that is controlled by Israeli Jews now. It was still minority Jewish. Even today, if you add up the Jewish population and the non-Jewish Arab population, the Palestinian population, it's not as if Jews might be a majority now, but if you look at the land under control, the Jews have just taken more and more and more and more. And I was kind of looking at the scorecard, or the lineup. The people in the Israeli government, the people who aren't in the government, the parties, the opposition parties, and there was what was that name? Something, Yair Lapid. Yair Lapid was prime minister for about 4 months last year. A year ago, he was prime minister, And he is part of what they think of as a centrist part. So what is centrist? And he's doesn't support Netanyahu. He's not part of the government of national unity. What is centrist in Israel? Well, I mean, he's still gung-ho for annexing the Golan Heights, which was taken from Syria. He's still like, yeah, he's willing to have a two-state solution, but of course it includes all of the land seized by Israel in 1948. It also includes big hunks of land seized in 67. And so, you know, what's left over? Okay, well, we'll let you have pretend to have a state here. It's not viable. It's not going to have defensible borders. Probably wouldn't have control over its own borders. It won't have control over its own airspace. And if you want to call it a state, you can call it a state. And if you want to call it chicken soup, you can call it chicken soup. You know, and that's the centrist. That is the pro peace position in Israel. I mean, there was a Israeli peace movement, but it is moribund now. I guess there's still a couple of organizations that put out good information, but in terms of having any kind of say in politics, they're gone. I don't think there's any. I was looking through the parties in parliament, and I don't think there's anything that you could remotely call
a pro-peace party. And look what's happening to us. The same thing's happening to us. In the 1960 census, we were just about 90% of the population.
There was about 160 million whites. In the 2020 census, was there maybe 200 million? So maybe you had an increase from
160 million to 200 million. But the non-white population of the United States during the same period of time went from about 20 million now to 140 million. So our population increased in 60 years. It increased by 25%. And the non-white population increased by 600%.
Yeah.
And that's a trend line.
We are, like you were kind of mentioning, they were the new Palestinians. And that's a good way of looking at it. The Jews as a whole, they have to deal with us, meaning the European Americans and the Europeans for that matter, but more so Americans. They have to deal with us differently since we still have the right to bear arms. And they know that when we are pushed, we will fight back. A lot of us actually enjoy that. You know, we love to defend ourselves. You know, when a sword is pressed up against our neck, you know, we will fight back. Palestinians, I'm not saying they won't fight back, but they are largely disarmed and castrated almost. They don't have somewhat of a military at all. And so now I'm sure they feel they can get away with a lot more with them.
But look what they did. And so, yeah, we are on the one hand, but will we ever fight back?
Yeah, that's the question.
But look at what they did. And this operation, what they call the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, they've inflicted more pain on Israel then
and it should go without, you know, saying that all these Palestinian refugees are going to go, they're going to be flooded into Europe and America, right? That's this Jewish wet dream that they've had for a long time. I'm sure Barbara Spector is doing her hand rubbing as we speak, you know, and just frothing at the mouth of the thought of, you know, 6 million Palestinians being flooded into white nations.
Yeah, and that's what they would like to do. And this is what Benjamin Netanyahu was talking about. He said that the Gazans have, you know, they have to leave, they have to evacuate. Well, first of all, Palestinians have the experience, maybe not this generation, but the generation of 1948, has the experience of evacuating because there's going to be a war, and then never ever being allowed to come back and losing everything. And so Netanyahu said that he wanted everybody in the north half of the Gaza Strip to evacuate the south half. Well, he's been trying to get the Egyptians to open the border. The Egyptians aren't going to open the border. And otherwise, there's nowhere for them to go. And the last thing that anybody who either supports us or supports the Palestinians should want is for the Gazans to be evacuated. They have been, over the past decades, it was pathetic, and I don't mean it in an insulting way, but it was pathetic watching them fight, because they were the Israelis, but they didn't have the means, and so they would shoot off their homemade rockets, and every now and then one might get through and kill somebody. I killed somebody in a house somewhere, and there'd be a whole bunch of kvetching, and Israelis would launch rockets, flatten buildings, have hundreds of Palestinian deaths, and just a handful of Jewish deaths. Right now, if you're looking at the scorecard, it's pretty even. And that's never happened before. And they've spent these past several years really, really preparing. So I don't know, but it would obviously to have 6 million Palestinians flood into other countries, whether they're Arab countries, European countries. Anyway, I'm just kind of stammering here. We've got just maybe another 4 or 5 minutes. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. All sorts of things could happen.
I don't think you can be. So I mean, I think you have to be surprised and frankly impressed by the effectiveness of the Hamas military. And you wonder if the Israeli military is capable of.
Can they have operations that are going to satisfy the Israeli public without going so far that they are going to cross lines that Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Iran, Syria, Hezbollah are going to permit? And the Israeli public, they need that satisfied. They need like blood sacrifice. They need to have massive numbers of Palestinians dead in order to feel like they won. And if they don't feel like they won, all hell's going to be internally for them. And in order to get that feeling that they won, they've got to do things that a big hunk of the world won't agree.
You're kind of breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you hear what I had to say?
Maybe the last sentence I would repeat again.
Okay. So, in order for the Israeli Jews to be satisfied that their government has protected them adequately, they need to see very difficult scorecard. So if Israeli Jews have already, if 1,000 of them have died, they need to see 10,000 or 20,000 Palestinians dead. They need to see that in order to be satisfied. Otherwise, there's just going to, Netanyahu will be kicked out of office. There's going to be just all sorts of chaos within Israel. But in order to have that kind of carnage, they're going to be doing things that could very well cross red lines for Arab countries, Hezbollah, and bring in new enemies that they're going to have to fight. So that's the, so what do you think of that?
I agree. I'm for Iran. I'm currently rooting for Iran, and from what I understand, they're pretty smart people. So I wouldn't be pushing them too far either.
You got Iran, yeah. And then the other thing, and people, you know, there's been people out there who say that Putin's controlled by Jews and all this, and he loves Israel and blah blah blah.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
I'm currently rooting for Iran, and from what I understand, they're pretty smart people. So I wouldn't be pushing them too far either.
You got Iran. Yeah, and then the other thing, and people, you know, there's been people out there who say that Putin's controlled by Jews and all this, and he loved Israel and blah, blah, blah.
Putin has made statements that place responsibility squarely on Israeli actions over the years, but also on the United States.
Which has monopolized the peace process, right? The United States has to be the negotiators. They have to be the brokers of peace. And they've been doing this for at least 40 years. And all they've done is provided Israel with additional backing so they can act with impunity. Yeah. And so Putin has been critical, and he's getting much closer to the Arab League and to the Arab countries. I just brought it in, and the Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia.
So now would be a good time for everybody to make sure to get in the best shape as you possibly can, in case, you know, the proverbial shiza actually does hit the fan. It's good to be in shape and stock up on whatever kind of medicine you need to have. And I'm not talking about going all nuts with the prepping, but, you know, you never know what you're going to see. And it's, I think Sun Tzu says in the that book, The Art of War, during peacetime, prepare for war, and during war, prepare for peace. So that's kind of what I'm doing. I would definitely recommend everybody, you know, stock up. And if there's a draft, be a draft burner.
Yeah. All right. Well, that sounds good. I want to thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thank you for having me again. And, you know, as I say, Lord help us all. And, continue not cucking to the mainstream narrative.
Okay, and I'll be back again next time with another exciting episode of National Google Radio. I just got a call come in, so I'm going to jump over to that. Thanks very much.
Okay, yeah, no problem. I'll be in touch, of course.
Bye-bye.
Hey, have a good one. Bye.
Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.